everyone, and welcome to Echo This. Today, our panel is going to dive into a very, very sensitive and a very complicated and a very rampant topic as our source of conversations of empowerment and hope. We're going to first start by introducing our panel, and here we are.
Hi, I'm Debbie Wimberly, a medical cannabis educator, consultant, speaker, health quality advocate, and patient. My passion lies in empowering individuals to develop an effective compass to guide their health and quality of life. My mission is to equip medical professionals, coaches, educators, and individuals with knowledge and tools needed to enhance their health and quality of life with informed and mindful decisions.
And I'm Lisa Jones, a speaker, consultant, and author that leverages the power of humor, gamification, and play as fuel to enhance collaboration, increase engagement, and maximize productivity.
And I am your moderator for today. I'm Amy Weishaus, and I am a lifelong learner and teacher. And my platform is that all of us in the atmosphere of our lives and society and the world today, we have the ability and we have the responsibility and the power to create joy wherever and when and whenever we can. We have a topic today, though, that is not entirely joyful. And I must say that we really feel that we came up with an interesting title for today's session. And the episode is going to focus on the great fraud escape, mastering the art of vigilance. I could go on and on for hours about statistics, about the billions of dollars that are fraudulently taken from people. And also, it's not only the monetary or property values that we're talking about, but it's also, unfortunately, people's self-esteem and their mental health. This has turned into a major mental health crisis in our society. I would just like everyone to be on the same page with a clear definition of what fraud is and how we use some terminology interchangeably. You know, fraud is defined as the intentional deception to secure unfair or unlawful gain or to deprive a victim of a legal right. So fraud may violate civil or criminal law, and the purpose could be monetary, which we assume it normally is, but it could be for other benefits like fraudulent obtaining of a passport or a travel document or even a driver's license. And it comes to mind that there are people who did fraudulent backing up on their resumes of facts to get them national television broadcast jobs where there have been incidences of fraud in that arena, or fraudulent material information to try to get a mortgage and qualify where the material is fraudulent. So we could use scam kind of interchangeably with fraud. A scam is a dishonest scheme or fraud. And then there's also the word scandal that kind of floats around here. And we're not going to touch specifically on scandals today, but that would refer to an action or an event that's regarded as morally wrong or legally wrong, but it causes a general public outrage when something scandalous happens or rumor of some kind of malicious gossip about events, actions, or people. So we're going to start our investigation today looking at our first segment of the show. And the first segment looks at empowering us with conversations of hope related to our topic. And let's look at the roots of frauds and scams. I'd like to have you consider that the psychological skills of scammers and the people involved in all levels of fraudulent behavior, these are often very highly developed and intimidating skills. So how can we find hope in transforming generations of vulnerable people who are followers and easily duped? How can we transform them into educated, alert, and protected consumers? A very big order. So let's start with Debbie on this.
Well, I think that this is a really important conversation about how do we do this. And I think that we need to first recognize that you could be very well be starting to get scammed at a very young age today because of the internet, social media, email. So it's really important that we understand that we start teaching this at a young age. So I decided to create a game called Alice in Scamland, a fraud prevention quest. And in this world, participants in Alice in Wonderland will navigate through a series of scenarios based on a story for each designed to teach them about different types of fraud and how to avoid it. So welcome to Scamland, where everything isn't quite what it seems. Just like Alice, you will encounter many different characters and puzzles that will need to be fixed or worked through and navigated. And this is done through role play. And so there's a whole series of questions and processes that we can deal with. And the first one is the rabbit hole. And that is actually the objective is understanding the phishing scams, which are generally done on the internet, and learning what you need to do when you see an email, how to recognize it, what you're looking for, and those kind of things, and identifying it. One of the other things that I created is the Mad Hatter's Tea Party, recognizing a fake claim or offer. At the tea party, the Mad Hatter and Alice offer something to Alice that she thinks is way too good to be true, like a magical teapot. And then you will need to evaluate the offer and determine if it can be deemed as good or if it's questionable. So this is just a little insight into some of the things that we can do. And this game can be played at any age. It doesn't matter what age you are, but I think the sooner we start teaching this, the better off we are.
Wow. That, you know, you just relieved me of my doom and gloom and depression in the kinds of research I was coming up on this topic, Debbie, because we all can approach these very serious problems with a sense of play. And if children are introduced to it, where they're learning at the same time they're having fun and engaging their imaginations and creativity, I can't think of anything better. And Lisa, I know you're in the same vein, so help continue to uplift me.
These sneaky scammers and their highly polished psychological skills, it's like they all graduated with honors from the University of Deception, not a college I would recommend, by the way. We're about to turn the scammy saga into a blockbuster, though, a blockbuster hit of educated, alert, and protected consumers. So the first thing I would say is let's equip our heroes, that will be us, with the shield of education. And we're talking workshops, seminars, and online courses that teach the art of spotting red flags and dodging those too good to be true offers. I think education is really the key here. And then the next is crank up the volume on awareness campaigns. Think colorful, catchy infographics splashed across social media that has tips and tricks to outsmart the scammers. And then you can have different memes, jingles, and even a few viral dances, because why not? We want to keep the message fun and memorable. And then, of course, we want to make sure we're talking about community engagement. We can have local events where neighbors can come together to share their experience and tips. And you can really think of this as a potluck of wisdom, where everyone brings a dish of knowledge to the table. And it's all about creating networks of support where we're all looking out for one another, because when we're looking out for one another, that's when we can truly be of service. And then empowering our young generations, because I think kind of what Debbie was saying, empowering them with critical thinking skills from the get-go. And this is where schools can introduce fun interactive programs that teach kids to question, verify, and trust their instincts. You can imagine a classroom where students become detectives, solving puzzles and cracking codes that scammers could only dream of. And that's really the whole thing about play, is having them play detective. And what we're doing is we're not just fighting off scammers, we're creating a culture of vigilance and empowerment. We're turning the tables. We're making sure the only thing that these scammers are left with is a lesson in underestimating the power of an informed and united community. And together, we can make sure the only thing these scammers catch is a serious case of the oops, I've been outsmarted.
Wow. Well, in order to outsmart the scammers, I agree with both of you that we really have to approach this with some kind of levity and also with early intervention so that students, children, even at home, they can have discerning minds with critical thinking and to question everything. We've had episodes about curiosity and the importance of questioning. And I took a little look at, you know, the kinds of things that do impact children and the kinds of scams in their realm are sometimes fake contests, fake scholarships, online shopping fraud, extortion, outright extortion, and sexual kinds of targeting, which are creating victims of them. And there's also online quizzes and talent scouting schemes where they're lured into modeling or thinking that they're going to, you know, pay for headshots and get these commercials and modeling. It's very, very, very formidable. There are pop-up scams that we have to teach our children not to answer and not to give information. And sometimes there's a free service that's involved. So there's so much of that that maybe we're not aware of unless we're really looking into what they're consuming on the internet. We also have a certain personality type that we could look at, and we could also, I think, attune our children, our students, to look for these traits in people. One of them is narcissism, where somebody is totally self-centered and often a bit dictatorial about anybody else's, you know, concerns or needs other than their own. There are antisocial behaviors. There are people who show no empathy whatsoever. They're very cold towards others. And whether it's a multi-million dollar scam or something that's taking place on the playground, there are certain personality types. I'd venture to say even bullies, you know, might be a red flag for that scammer psychological type that we unfortunately are overpopulated with today, world over. So when we start with that basis, let's look at what some people have thought about all the opportunities there are for this to take place. And our next question is about opportunity. So it has been formulated by somebody that there's a fraud triangle and that this provides conditions for a person to perpetrate harmful behaviors. So the three legs of the triangle suggest that first there has to be financial pressure, and then there's an opportunity, and then some kind of rationalization on the part of the perpetrator. So how can we create counter opportunities that are going to give us hope that we can transform these people in our society and guide them so that they're no longer these sheep or easily led people who are vulnerable, but who could be very strong and protected and very confident, self-assured consumers? How can we do that? Lisa, let's start with you.
Sure. Well, I think that the infamous fraud triangle can be like the Bermuda Triangle of unethical behavior, if you will. So it's kind of like the three-legged stool of scammery. And I put that school of scammery in the first leg is financial pressure, opportunity, and rationalization, or the second and the third. So what if we can transform this triangle into a dazzling pyramid of ethical awesomeness instead? So let's first talk about the tackle of financial pressure. This is really the leg of the triangle. And think of it like a stress-inducing monster under the bed. And we can banish this monster by fostering financial wellness and support systems. And imagine a workplace where financial literacy is as common as coffee breaks, right? So employees can attend these fun interactive sessions that demystify personal finance, making it more accessible and manageable. And then if we're talking about the next leg of the stool, which would be opportunity, that is kind of like the sneaky window left open for fraudsters to climb right through. But instead, we're going to slam that window shut with robust internal controls and a culture of transparency. So think of this as installing an advanced security system, but with a friendly vibe, because adults, we can do regular audits, clear policies, and then open communication channels, because you really want to make it hard for unethical behavior to slip through the cracks, hence the window. And then we can often add a twist of fun too. So we can implement gamification and compliance training. Employees can participate in engaging scenarios and challenges them and teach them how to spot and report suspicious activities. And then of course, with gamification, we want to make sure we include rewards because everyone loves rewards, but reward those who demonstrate ethical behavior, recognition and incentives, turning honesty into the coolest game in town. And then the third leg, the last leg, is tackle rationalization. And that is really the mental gymnastics that scammers use to justify their actions. And here's where we flip the script with a strong ethical culture and really creating that narrative where honesty is the hero of every story. And how can we cement this ethical pyramid? Well, I think that we can just build a counter opportunities. We can promote ethical behavior through continuous education and support, again, with the education, right? Create an environment where ethical conduct is recognized and rewarded, and then encourage open dialogue and provide resources for employees to seek guidance when they are faced with ethical dilemmas. And really what we're doing is constructing that fortress of ethical conduct where the financial pressure, the opportunity, and the rationalization are transformed into pillars of support, transparency, and integrity. And together we can create this world where the only triangles we encounter are the ones that you see in geometry class, which some people really like to see those. So, yes.
Wow.
Geometry class.
Well, you really given a very comprehensive overview of spin doctoring and making this triangle into something that we can really improve upon and perfect. And I really appreciated that. So, Debbie, what's your perspective on this?
Well, since Lisa laid all that out so beautifully, I'm going to take this in a little different direction, and I'm going to talk about it in healthcare. And I call this Humpty Dumpty's Ethical Rescue, a fraud prevention quest. And there are two areas that I really want to dive into here, and one is your medical billing, and the other one is a caregiving. And first and foremost, make sure you're aware of all the scams that are going on out there. And there is a Federal Trade Commission where you can look up current scams that are going on and find medically all the scams that are happening right now. But this is true across all countries. This isn't just the US. I found that interesting that this happens everywhere. We're not, no one's immune to this. But if you are a caregiver or you're looking for a caregiver to take care of someone that you love, you need to make sure that they're bonded. You need to make sure they come from a reputable place. And if they're a family member, you need to make sure that there's someone else involved following and tracking the money besides just giving one person sole care of someone's money. There needs to be really good checks and balances in place because the person that's sick and that needs caregiving isn't capable a lot of times of taking care and managing those tasks. So it's really important that we look at this from the perspective that we need to take care of them in all aspects, not just their health, but financially and their well-being as well, because it could be easily they're being targeted and said, if you don't give me this money, then this will happen. So, you know, we need to be having real conversations with our seniors or anyone that's in that situation that's being caregived for. The second one is medical billing. It is not uncommon for you to be double billed for things in the medical community. And I'm not saying that maybe people are doing it maliciously, it just happens. And it feels like you're being scammed when you start looking at your bills and you're being double billed, or it's fraudulent. And it is, it shouldn't happen. So you have to be sure you're overlooking your bills on a regular basis and making notice and contacting and reporting it to the Trade Commission, to your insurance company, to your doctor's office. This is where we need to be giving a helping hand to the person that's really in a health crisis and needing help. And it takes all of us, and it takes communication and open dialogue, sharing with someone what you've discovered so that maybe they can help you understand that this isn't just you, it could be lots of other people that are going through this at the same time.
Very, very well outlined for us, Debbie, and that medical billing is something that I think all of us or someone we know has had to deal with. And this is, you know, an institution comes with a bill, and Everybody is worried about debt and credit, and it's really a nightmare. So that kind of vigilance is so important. You know, as we're discussing this episode, my mind right now is going to the fact that just before we went on camera and started filming, I just got a call that said, suspected fraud, potential fraud on my phone. And this week I had to replace my debit card again because someone was trying to make a purchase in Las Vegas. And the title of the vendor was something with hair accessories. I mean, totally outlandish. And yesterday I noticed there are two other charges from Louisiana, and I'm just praying that they're not on the new debit card, but on the old one, because the first one was denied by my bank, and why these two weren't denied, I don't know. So it's kind of like I'm in, not the frying pan, but in the fire as we're speaking. And it's very violating and it's very disturbing because time from my day has to be taken. And now, of course, I have to contact all the people that have direct withdrawal and contact them again. So it's an ongoing thing. And I wanted to say that I think a lot of it has to do with the crazy landscape of finances today, the internet. And we need to have some kind of sense of power over our money and our competence. If, like Debbie says, if we're older and we don't have the mental capacity to deal with our finances, to make sure there's a trusted family member or a trustee in the form of a reputable longtime CPA or somebody to act on our behalf. But I'm going back also to my childhood and elementary school, where I'd like to suggest that we need to develop more respect about money and financial empowerment. And Lisa alluded to that with the term financial literacy. Financial literacy is actually putting some courses and coursework into a curriculum. So students are actually learning about dealing with finances, from what is credit, you know, to how to understand what a credit score is, how to budget, how to save. And I remember that we had something with little passbooks, and it was maybe called the Christmas Club, but it was through a local bank, and we saved $2 every week. $2 every week. And at the end of the year, 52 weeks, there's $104, which in those days was like a million. And we had $104 at our disposal. Well, you could bet that hard-saved money was going to be spent very responsibly. And I wish, you know, that everybody would have that kind of training to know that there's a certain respect, I can't think of a better word, a respect for money and a feeling of empowerment and control over one's finances that I think we're lacking in teaching our kids. I know of young kids that are being given debit cards at a very early age. I think they're too young and too vulnerable to bullying and peer pressure, or even an adult getting a hold of that card and passwords and so on. And I think we have a lot to look at here, an awful lot. So on that note, I'm wondering, in the next part of our discussion here, if we could just interject some of our own experiences. I just did, actually, with what's going on in the moment. And I'd like to know if the rest of you could share an example of a particular fraud from your own experiences, or maybe a colleague or family member or friend of yours that you know of a situation, or even something you read about in the local media or the news feed. And what lessons possibly does this fraudulent behavior teach us on, you know, how can we do better? So Lisa, why don't you start us off?
Sure, I'm gonna use myself as an example. And this is really the time that I almost fell for a scam that literally could have been straight out of a sitcom. So I called to get health insurance because I needed gap health insurance. So I called the number listed on the what I thought was the government website, and I checked the address like I always do. And the caller, who sounds as smooth as butter, asked for my social security number right off the bat, which I was hesitant in giving. I thought that was weird. So I asked why, and they said that they needed to proceed with the application. Then after that came this merry-go-round of transfers. I was passed around like a hot potato, but each new representative was trying to get more additional information. And by the fifth transfer, my spidey senses started tingling. So I hung up, and I immediately decided that it was like a little shady. So I went on to like the three credit bureaus and decided I was going to freeze my credit just in case, because they had my name and birth date and that kind of stuff. And then cue the dramatic forehead slap, because right after I'm like, how could I have fallen for this? Even though I didn't get called, I called the number. So you never know. So my advice and the lessons I learned from that were to always verify the source. So what I could have probably done is when I called and said like, oh, who am I reaching? Like the double check I'm getting in the right place. So we're always double checking who's calling or the number that you are calling. And if it feels sketchy, which in my case it did, hang up and call back using the number on the company's official website, which I did, but for some reason it got moved around. So that was a little, there's also a number that you can call on the website to ask what the correct number is too, usually. And then the next part I have is to guard your personal info. So never share your sensitive details like your social security number over the phone with strangers, even if they sound like Morgan Freeman. So still say, no, Morgan, I'm not giving you my information. And then trust your gut. If something feels off, it probably is, because scammers thrive on confusion and urgency. And of course, they were like, oh, we need this now. You're going to get the best rates. That was urgency. And that's another reason why I was like, this isn't right. And then, of course, the most important thing here is report it. So let the real company authorities know about the scam. You'll be the hero who saves others from similar headaches, because I'm sure I wasn't the only person going through the same thing.
Wow. Insurance. That's a place where we're looking for comfort and protection, and we're really getting the runaround. That's really a hard one. Debbie, what are some of your observations on things you've seen?
I had a hard time picking this one because there's so many that I have been involved with and so many in helping other people get out of. And so I think I'm going to talk about helping someone get out of a scenario. And it's, you know, have you ever had someone call you on the phone and say, this is Microsoft Office, there's a problem on your computer, you need to let us have access. And then this person that's logged onto the computer and lets them in doesn't realize this isn't Microsoft Office. First and foremost, how does Microsoft Office have your phone number? Generally, they don't. So, you know, question everything that this person says. And I've learned that if somebody calls me to tell me I have a problem and I haven't reached out to someone, that's the first red flag that there's something wrong here, because I don't seem to think I have a problem. So if you're calling me, then I can't trust you. Second, then tell them that you want to hang up and you're going to call Microsoft directly. And then they very well may say, oh, no, don't do that. We'll take care of it from here. That's your second red flag, that there's something that's not right, because they shouldn't care if you want to call Microsoft and verify that there's a problem. So I know someone that got caught in this trap, let them into their computer, and they actually ended up wiring them money and thinking that they were going to fix their computer, and they did not. So my husband and I, we had to go in and help rescue this situation and help this young lady get out of this. And the only thing, the only thing we could do at this point was completely clean up her computer, make sure there was nothing that they had put on their computer that would continue to have access, and then really go through training with this person, explaining how you need to understand, just because you buy a computer that has Microsoft on it doesn't mean that Microsoft is going to be calling you when there's a problem. They don't monitor our computers like that. So it's just getting the mindset and the skill set to recognize what would a company actually do. How many other companies might call me on something like this? They don't. You need to call them when you have a problem. So it's just giving the right keys, the right information, communication, but also be sure you're communicating with somebody else that this is happening, because you may find that you're embarrassed, but if you don't communicate it, then you don't realize this is happening to a lot of people. Because I know the first time I got this call myself, I actually knew that this was a scam. And so I took this guy that I was on the phone with on a wild goose chase. And I started giving him all kinds of reasons and things to do without giving him access to my computer, because I knew the longer I tied him up, he couldn't be calling somebody else to scam them. So there's a whole lot of ways that you can go about this. And so it's just always being mindful that if somebody's asking you for information that cold calls you, never give it. Make sure you go and check and verify who's asking for this information and that you could trust them.
Wow, very, very powerful. And you became a master manipulator too, it seems like, trying to do what Lisa alluded to in the beginning, trying to outwit the scammers. And it's so interesting that here we are, and we're actually providing financial literacy right now in this episode. You know, the great fraud escape, how to escape from it through vigilance. And this is financial literacy in action. I wanted to, tell you that there have been numerous episodes of fraud that I've unfortunately been a party to, all of which were totally legitimate looking, even with face-to-face contact. One was being promised advertising space on a placemat in a restaurant, a reputable restaurant. I even saw the proof of the draft of what the ad would look like and where it would be placed. I got to choose where it was going to be placed and so on and so forth. And the recommendation came through someone I knew through a networking group. And yet it was never published. There was a similar fraud for a very reputable faith-based journal, Directory of Services. And unfortunately, the salesperson involved had a whole story about how he and his partner had a falling out and his funds were taken by the partner and the ad never went in, and I was out money in both cases. Egg on my face, it was kind of incredulous that this even happened because everything was so personal and upfront, and then bingo, the bottom fell out of it. I live in a 55 and over community, and the Reporter, which is a monthly newspaper, big headlines screaming out, resident targeted, don't become a victim. A gentleman went only because he was being pressured by phone contacts, took out $5,000 from the bank, was at an ATM machine, was about to send this money, but fortunately he got flustered with the technology. His wife got on the phone, took the phone from him at the convenience store, and the minute they heard another party and the woman's voice, they hung up, and that was the end of it. That saved him $5,000. Some of the local banks, where we have a heavily populated senior population here in Florida at this area, they're actually starting to counsel and ask the elderly people, some of whom may not be in the best cognitive health, where's this money going? Why do you need this money? And there are places like Home Depot that are refusing to sell customers large amounts of gift cards, which is another untraceable thing that scammers are asking for, gift cards in large denominations. So these are all in my environment every single day. One neighbor was scammed out of thousands of dollars, and her children were beside themselves. And one of them said, when mom asked me if I like her to pay off my mortgage years ago, why didn't I say yes? I said, no, mom, live off your money, live a healthy, long life. And if she ever knew that this is what the money would come to and be totally lost, everybody would rethink every choice they make involving money. So we really have a lot of thoughtful prevention and decision making that we need to take care of. Are there any comments that any of you want to add before we go on? Is there anything you in the moment want to chime in on and add? Okay, then let's look at our fourth question today, which involves something that I've only recently come to learn about, and it's the term catfishing. Catfishing, F-I-S-H-I-N-G, fishing, catfishing. This is a wild and widespread current phenomenon, which is the process of luring someone into a relationship by means of a fictional online persona. It doesn't have to be a romantic relationship, but that is most common. Research shows that those who lie, con, defraud, and manipulate, they do so often in a way to manage their own low self-esteem and difficulties with their own self, their own sense of self. Some of these people are not just fraudulent, like, you know, all the bad characteristics of manipulation and narcissism on or challenges. So I'm wondering, what can you, on the panel, what can you suggest as a way to develop an atmosphere of strength and self-assuredness and self-worth that would address avoiding the severe mental health issues from arising from these scams? What can we do? Debbie, let's start with you.
I think first and foremost, we need to build a fortress of checks and balances within ourselves and within our community. And with the people that we do know and that live around us, that we trust, that have been involved in our lives for a long time. So tell someone you trust that something is going on. And this can alert them to what is happening to you so that they can help you. But they also may have had the same experience and have some information that they can share with you. Listen to those that are around you when they're telling you there are red flags. If they're seeing things that are happening in your life that don't add up, maybe you need to acknowledge that maybe they're right. Yes, I think that a lot of times when we're being catfished, not that I've been personally catfished, but when somebody is being catfished, I understand that they're usually lonely, sad, they've gone through grief, or something of that nature. So it is easy to want to gravitate to someone that builds you up and makes you feel good. But a lot of times that person's not even the person that you think you're talking to. They may let themselves be known to be a man, let's say, when they're actually a woman, and AI is allowing them to change their voice and entertain that. But once you try to talk to them, to meet with them, then they never seem to make it or show up. That should be a red flag. And I guess the last thing I'll say, I've been catfishing my whole life, but it's for fish. And this just seems like a really funny name to be calling this, because I guess when I throw the line out and reel it in, I would be luring in a fish to try to catch it. So think of it in that way, that it's somebody actually throwing out a line to catch you. And they don't know when they call you what it is, you know, or who you are. They're just taking a guess. And so they're just hoping that the person that picks up that phone is going to have the response they're looking for. And as many as they've got you, they start reeling you in.
Wow. Very interesting, Debbie. Thank you for all those insights. And Lisa, how are you going to amplify all this craziness?
Well, Debbie kind of said what I was thinking, and it makes you look at ordering catfish on the menu. Like you see it and you're like, oh no, can't order that, because then you don't want to be catfished. You never know what's going to happen. But no, I'm sure people still order catfish and are fine. So I'm not saying that. But here's how we turn the frown upside down. And the first thing really is to spread awareness, because you can use fun workshops and online resources, and that you can teach people the signs of catfishing. And knowledge is power. And of course, what I mentioned earlier, memes help too. They add humor to everything. And then kind of what Debbie was talking about already, but that's building your support networks. You can create these support groups and other professional counseling, because there's really strength in numbers, and sharing is caring. And that's why it's good to let somebody know. And then a third thing you can do is boost your self-worth, promote self-development programs, and celebrate your small wins. You're turning that self-care into a party. And then, of course, a good thing to do is encouraging open dialogue about it. And that's what we're all about, the open dialogue, fostering open discussions about these online relationships. Like, don't keep it a secret, make it a safe space, like a virtual hug. And I feel that by educating and supporting each other, we can really outsmart the scammers. And that's how we build a community of strong, savvy, and scam-proof individuals. Now that's a happy ending. And if you wanted to go celebrate your happy ending, I guess you can go to a restaurant and order some catfish that you know is cooked through a reputable restaurant.
Wow. And celebrating the happy ending, is just three words: vigilance, 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 and awareness, 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 and education, education. It's all education. It's all being so aware of what's going on. I told you, recently learned this term catfishing, and I was astounded to learn that there was a movie in 2020 called Catfish, a documentary. And the man who started on this crusade did so because he discovered that the woman with whom he was involved online was falsifying information, sending phony pictures, and involved with him. And I don't know the exact details, but he went out, and on MTV, there is a show called Catfish. It's a reality show. And it has just been, in January of 24, renewed for its 9th season. I find this incredible that it's in the media already 9 years. I actually watched some troubleshooting intervention episodes last night, and I was riveted. I really was riveted. I'm not a big reality TV show fan, but I was riveted to the screen. This guy with his team and cameras and microphones, they literally went out to the home of a person named Rosa, and Rosa came to the door crying, and Rosa was a man, and Rosa confronted the victim. The victim was a really sweet guy who had fallen in love with Rosa, and he said, hey man, I've given you 7 years of my life. I'm already making plans that involve you. So whatever evidence he had of photos or maybe even an AI version of this girl talking to him, which is perfectly attainable and feasible in the world of AI today, he was devastated and he was very embarrassed as well. And the young man, who seemed a bit unstable, he cried, he apologized, and he said, man, you don't know the troubles I've had. I've been bullied. And, again, low self-esteem, someone who was trying to get love from an artificial source, and someone interchanging and feeling that he could be loved, albeit behind the screen. There was another episode with an intervention where a young woman was brought in the company of her friends and her sister, who were telling her, this is not acceptable. We value you as a real person, not you as a fake persona. Why are you doing this? And there was another one of a girl who actually fell in love with this man, and they met face to face. They were very young, and they were going to try to make a go of it. She was kind of taken with his cuteness, but he was very shy, very vulnerable. He said, I could never say these things in person, but he could over the anonymity of the online screen. I really, I'm going to advise you all to tune in to MTV, some of the episodes of Catfish, because you'll see some of the results, some of the psychological and emotional trauma that can occur from this. And think about the people around you and, you know, how viable are they in your daily relationships? And let's see if you could detect something before all these horrible things happen. So we're coming to our last question in the series today. And that one is about, it's about the enigma question that we always look at, because there's so much duality and there's so much paradox and mystery and confusion in this whole topic of frauds. So my question is, How do we navigate this treacherous terrain? How do we, in our final perspectives and advice for today's episode, what do we do? What's the takeaway on how we turn it around? Debbie?
Well, first and foremost, scams are taking place right now as we speak. And the U.S. is number one. The U.K. is number two. Canada is number three. India is number four. And Australia is number five. But it's happening everywhere. We always need to be on our toes and be curious. When somebody's asking you for something, you should always be asking yourself, why are they asking for this information? And how and why should I give it? And then go back and ask why again? Because it's so important that you understand before you give away anything of your information personally, give away yourself, anything, that you are asking these questions. Because with the internet today and the access that we have, it is just a much bigger game that we have that we can play. Scams have been going on forever. I can think back, I used to be an antique dealer, and there were all kinds of snake oil salesmen, and I would find all kinds of medical equipment and things like that that people were trying to sell to someone, that they would say it would help them with whatever. Watched a movie last night, and it was talking about this precious stone that could cure any health issue. And it was a movie, but I mean, this is just how these scammers start and go. So, you know, you need to make sure that you're really understanding why they're asking these questions, for what, and why would you give it. And then be sure that you're aware of the person. And I always say, hang up that phone, call them back, get your number yourself, don't ask them, and allow yourself to ask. I've had to do this with Amazon before. Somebody calling and saying that my account has been broached and that it's under attack and that I need to give them all this information. And I just hung up the phone and I called Amazon, and they said, that's a scam. So, you know, and then it got reported that it was a scam, that it was going on. And believe me, I'm not the only person that's on Amazon that's had to go through this. This is an ongoing thing. So we need to just make sure that we're asking the right questions and we're answering them for ourselves. Don't let somebody give the answers to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Debbie. And Lisa, what would you like to add to that?
Yeah, I kind of equate the landscape of frauds and scams to an escape room that's filled with puzzles and traps, because that's what I really feel like it is. So I think that if we turn it into a game where we're the heroes is the first thing to do. And that's, so if we're going to do that, like the step one would be suit up with knowledge, and we're going back to the knowledge. Let's just reinforce the knowledge right now. But you're really putting on your detective hat. You're arming yourself with the knowledge through the whatever it is, whatever you want to do. Maybe it's a workshop, reading up on the latest scam, but you're a level up in scam survival 101. And then the second thing is to trust your instincts. We talked about that already, but your gut feelings are like those spidey senses. So if something feels off, it is. Trust your hunches with the fishy emails and catfishy emails, if you want to say, if you want to throw the catfishing into there, Amy, or too good to be true offers. So we're thinking about that. And then, of course, with anything, stay alert, stay safe, be a ninja with your awareness. Keep your personal info secure and make sure you're verifying those sources before sharing details, because scammers can't trick a vigilant ninja, can they? They can't. And then the fourth thing is, of course, communicate and collaborate. Team up with the friends and family. Share your experiences and tips. Form that superhero squad to combat fraud together. And then, of course, we did mention this already, but report and rejoice. Spot a scam, report it quickly. Protect yourself and others. Celebrate your victory over scammers with a little dance, because you've earned it. And then the last thing, which is so important to have in everything, but keep the fun alive. Make safety fun. And that's kind of what we showed you, many examples of how to turn the learning into a game and reward yourself for staying vigilant. The more enjoyable it is, the more engaged you will be. And I really do feel that with knowledge, instincts, and alertness, teamwork, and a sprinkle of fun, we can turn the tricky terrain of frauds and scams into the playground of savvy sleuthing.
Thank you, Lisa. The enigma here is often in the scam and fraud situation, that we're putting our trust and thinking we're being protected by the people who are hustling us. Hurry up. Don't ask the bank executive, because some of them are in on this too. So they're telling us not to trust anyone but them. So this is part of the problem. Going back to financial literacy, there are courses and needs for older people to have them as well as children, because many women, for example, are left alone where their husbands were in charge of their finances. And then they totally feel having no empowerment because they don't really know what to do. So that there's a need for education on that level too. There's even a World Elder Abuse Awareness Day, and that is held every year to highlight situations. There's books, there's YouTubes, there's every government agency, AARP even has tips online. And we haven't even gone into the area of frauds when there's disaster relief frauds, when there's hurricanes, when there's international conflict, how to donate to these other countries, war-torn places where people want to give charity and maybe 1% of their charity dollar went to the charity and the rest went into the pockets of the administrators. So there's a lot to investigate here. And we know we've overwhelmed you a little bit, but we'd rather you be overwhelmed with resources and with thoughts about this than being overwhelmed as a victim of fraud. So we're going to sign off now on Echo This, and we're going to ask you to echo conversations so that you and the people around you can benefit and be powerful and be knowledgeable. And if you would like to help us out with some comments and feedback of your own, please contact us on social media, and you can find us under Echo Together, and that's Echo and the number 2, Gether, G-E-T-H-E-R, @gmail.com. And thank you so much for being with us. Be vigilant, be wise, and keep echoing all the good things that we need to spread. Thank you again, and bye for now.
Echo, echo.
Echo, echo, echo.
Echo, echo.
Echo, echo, echo.
Echo, echo. Listen in for empowering conversations of hope and opportunity.